Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
In addition to going to Chico Sports Club, hanging out with friends in coffee shops, and taking classes, Claire Althauser leads peer classes for Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Chico State University. She calls her popular class History Through Mystery. In fact, the class is so popular that she has said to open 4 sections, class being limited to 10 people. Claire Althauser was born and raised in Springfield, Massachusetts. She got a BA in English and American Lit from Wilson College in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, and an MA in English and American Lit from University of Pennsylvania. For 36 years, she was an educator, which included classroom teaching, administration, and counseling in both public and private schools. She moved to Chico from Southern California 21 years ago because her family was here. The last 11 years of teaching in Los Angeles was in a humanitas program in which she taught the music history, art history, and literature of a given era. A colleague taught the social, political, and economic history. Claire Althauser, welcome.
Thank you so much, Nancy.
Now, this class, this humanitas program, sounds really intriguing. How did that work?
It worked that teachers could combine any discipline that they wished to combine, and the logical one, of course, was literature and history. And this was for ninth graders in the barrio. They just had to take it, and the way it works is that...
Now I want to back up for a second and make sure people understood what kind of students you were dealing with. Students whose family had lots of books, for example, at home, huh?
We're dealing with people whose parents probably had no books. We're dealing with students who came from families with 11 kids in them, students who had to go pick up their siblings after school, get home, clean the house, and make dinner. But the thing that worked for them is that they began to see the logic of why things were. So, for example, if we were teaching the Renaissance, I would do Renaissance art, and my colleague would do Renaissance political history, and they could see why the art looked the way it did because it reflected the political history. And so many students said to me, gee, Mrs. A., this makes so much sense. And we were able to put our classes back to back, show them some videos if we wanted to do that, or have them read a play out loud if that worked. One time we actually had all the students do a drawing that was to reflect what they understood about Renaissance art. And I said, I don't care if you do stick figures, that's fine. I just want to know that you understand what this is about. And I put all of the pictures up on the board. I was fortunate in having a cork board for my whole room. And then at nutrition and at lunch, we opened it up for an art exhibit.
Well, this makes so much sense because I remember seeing paintings that didn't make too much sense to me at the time if I didn't know the history and what was going on at that time. And later, I kind of had to put the puzzle together myself. Say, oh, that's why this artist is painting this. And this is what he's trying to say. He was reacting against what was happening in his time. And so your students must have really been intrigued by this class.
Well, I'm sure that they were, and they understood why, for example, if they had to do Virgin Mary's instead of the normal rock star, for example. And it made a great deal of sense to them. We had a very, very fine budget. Whoever put this program together certainly knew how to write grants.
Oh, so it was already in existence. You didn't initiate this program.
No.
I
did in the junior high where I taught. Uh-huh. But when I went to the high school, it was there, and the money was there, and the buses were there, and substitute teachers were there. It was
incredible.
Now,
when you say buses were there, how come you needed a bus if the children were already there?
They were already there in school, and we put them on a bus and took them to the LA Art Museum. for example, to the Norton Simon Museum.
So field trips were a part of this program.
They were.
My guest is Claire Althauser, and she is a retired teacher, but she has come out of retirement to be a peer leader and teach classes for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute on the Chico State campus. And you've been telling us about this Humanitas program, and I'm sure some of that must have inspired this class you've created, or maybe not, for Osher, for Ollie, as it's known.
Well, I just love historical novels, and I was going to do a historical novels class, except for the fact that Roy Cook is doing it.
Somebody beat
me to that one, but I realized that so many people enjoy reading mystery stories. And when somebody asked for suggestions about what kind of classes can we have, I out of my mouth popped historical mysteries, and several people in the room said, I'm in. And so it was created, and there was to be one section, and all of a sudden there were 40 people that wanted to enroll. So I said, all right, I will do one every Monday.
And how long have you been doing this?
3 years. This is the third year, yes.
So that's six semesters.
That's correct.
And each time you change the reading list,
That's correct.
Because I noticed, I was taking a look at your, not just your reading list, but you include, because I like paper books myself, but you include electronic books, paperbacks, people can go to the library, so you tell them where to find these. And I noticed you have an electronic book with you right now.
I do, and I love it. In fact, I have all of the books right in there.
And you're not a teenager, I might add.
That is hardly that.
But you're keeping up with the technology.
Yes, yes. Okay. I find it much easier to read on electronic books, and this is not to push the Nook. I'm not being paid by Barnes & Noble.
But you do you use electronic books yourself. Now, what about the people who take your class? Do they need to have an electronic book?
No, no. I will not do a book unless it's available at least electronically and in paper. Many of these are not available in the library. I hope that they are, but they mm-hmm. aren't always. However, we have sources of where we can go to purchase paperbacks very cheaply. Thrift Books, for example, and there are other sources. Amazon and Barnes & Noble both have used books.
My guest is Claire Althauser. And she teaches the Ollie class called History Through Mystery. Ollie is Osher Lifelong Learning Institute on the Chico State campus. The first semester you taught this, I'm sure you must have had fun selecting the books you were going to teach.
I always have fun selecting the books I'm going to teach because I read them first. Many of these are books that I have read in the past, but I do reread them to be sure that they're applicable to what we're doing. Be sure that they're well written, and the most important thing is that they are historically accurate. So I do a lot of research, and that takes a lot of time. And fortunately, I have a tablet on which I can also read, and I can toggle back and forth between Google and what I'm reading to be sure that if a name is there and a character appears, is the character fictional? Is the character mm-hmm. historical?
Yeah. I always wonder when I look, because I love historical fiction too, and I do the same thing with my iPad. I have it there handy. I'm reading along and I check to see. Or if it's a recent book, I like to ask the author which of this was true and which wasn't. Some of them give us footnotes, notes to distinguish what they concocted and what was fact.
Whenever I can. I choose a book that has the author's notes, the disclaimers, this person was really real. The other thing that I have done, and it's been so much fun, is I email the author and tell the author, I'm doing your book, and is there anything you'd like to add? Some of them have written back lengthy information. Sharon Penman sent me 3 pages worth of information.
So most of your books then are recent enough that you can consult the author?
Oh, yes, yes. And
you just gave an example of one now. And what was her book?
And her book was The Queen's Man. And that's the first book that we ever did in this in this class, and it deals with Eleanor of Aquitaine, Henry II, and then a character that is made up. But all the other characters did exist, and she has somebody spying on all of these various people to report back to her so that John, her son John, the evil John, doesn't do what he shouldn't be doing. And we know that he did do what he shouldn't have been doing.
And this is a mystery.
This is a mystery.
Because that's the name of the course.
That's correct.
And history somebody, through mystery.
And somebody gets killed. And so the guy has to find out who did it. And it wasn't John. See, you think it's going to be John, but it is not. And this is a great way to learn an awful lot about history.
And so you contacted Sharon Penman, for example. And what did she say about her book, The Queen's Man?
Well, she said little about the book, but she wrote three pages about Henry II and why she wanted to hit him upside the head.
Oh.
And, of course, we all admire Eleanor of Aquitaine.
My guest is Claire Althauser, and she teaches a class. She's a peer leader for OLLI Lifelong Learning Institute, OLLI, and she teaches a class called History Through Mystery. So this book that you were just talking about takes place in 12th century England.
That's correct.
What are some other books that you have?
I think that one of the things that is very, very interesting is the books by Peter Tremaine, which deal with 7th century Ireland, and the ones that, it's called My Lady Judge by Cora Harrison, which also deals with 15th century Ireland, just before Henry VIII conquered Ireland and took the Church of England in there. And one of the things that we discovered both in 7th century Ireland and 15th century Ireland is that women had rights that all of a sudden they didn't have anymore. Women were judges. Women could own property. Women could divorce. And if they divorced, the property came to them. They were very, very strong Irish women. And we didn't see that, for example, in England, where the women were suppressed. You would never find a woman judge in 15th century England, for example.
And yet they were neighbors.
And they were neighbors. And that line divided them. And we know that their cultures are so terribly different. The other thing that these mystery books do show is a lot about the culture of the times, the period when they took place. And I've tried to go through all of the world and not just stick to Europe. So, for example, there's a book called The Claws of the Cat by Susan Spann, and that deals with the samurai of Japan.
Uh-huh.
And what did we know about them? So very little.
Yeah, in fact, I often think about the history that I took coming through high school and college and feel there were huge gaps in what we were taught somewhat about Japan or India. I feel there's so much I would have liked to have learned about some of these cultures. And your books, you take your students all over the world.
Well, one of the problems, of course, with teaching history in high school and in college is there are just so many days in the week and so many weeks in the semester, and that's it. And I just wonder, what are students learning today, for example? I'm sure probably American history starts at World War II.
Whereas when I was coming up, that's when it ended.
Right, exactly. And that becomes a real problem also.
So you've just taken us to Ireland, for example, and then to Japan. And what century Japan was that when you were telling us about the...
That was 16th century Japan.
16th century.
Yes.
So it sounds like you go back pretty far. See, from 12th century France, 5th century Greece.
That's a great book, The Pericles Commission.
Yeah.
And it deals with a murder that actually happened. The man was killed and fell right off the Areopagus. And nobody ever solved the murder. They had absolutely no idea how it happened. So Gary Corby decided to invent a character named Nikolaus, who was going to be the detective and solve the murder. And he was hired by Pericles to do this. Now, he is probably only one of two characters in that book that did not actually exist, which makes it even more interesting. And Nikolaus is young, and so he has a younger brother who's an absolute pest. And the younger brother keeps saying, well, Nicholas, I've been thinking. Nico, and Nico says, don't think, Sophocles. And the parents of Nikolaus and Sophocles were really the parents of Sophocles. And the book is very funny. And yet you see how democracy was born. And Pericles was, as we know, the leader of the Golden Age.
Yeah, in fact, sometimes I pick up a book. I was actually, I was traveling in France, and I saw they had some books on a shelf, and I was looking for something to read. And in the title, it said something like The History of Vegetarianism. But I found the history so riveting because it was kind of peripherally about vegetarianism. It was about what was going on at that time through history, that people happened to be vegetarians or not. And one chapter was on this group in the south of France. And I knew some about them, but I learned a lot more about them. Do you have people read anything that has about the Cathars?
That's the next book so the next book we're doing after this month, February.
Uh-huh.
And it's called The Secret Supper. And it deals with Da Vinci's Last Supper. And Da Vinci, he may not have been a Cathar himself, but he had Cathar leanings. And there's a lot of conjecture that this painting actually has in it things that show that he was a Cathar. And one of the real keys to this, if anybody is going to look at that painting, take a very good look at the tablecloth, because there are knots at the end. And the Cathars used that as a symbol for Mary Magdalene. And they believed, of course, that Mary Magdalene was Jesus' wife.
Well, now, if people read Dan Brown, they've heard about this painting.
Yes.
But now, how are the two books different? The one that you're going to have your students read
deals specifically with the painting only, mm-hmm. and the characters in the painting, whereas Dan Brown's is a thriller. This is, let's take a look at this painting. The book was written by Javier Sierra, who's Spanish, so it was translated from Spanish into English. And although he says that he has read Dan Brown, he also had consulted many more historical documents than Dan Brown had. So I don't mean to put Dan Brown
No,
down,
I understand.
Dan
the,
Brown
but
down.
This is a different... But we've been talking about this group. Maybe we should you should tell us about who the Cathars were.
Well, the Cathars were a group of Christians who did not believe in many of the rituals that the Roman Catholic Church did. They wore plain clothes. They were vegetarians, which, of course, would have tied into
right,
your
it was
book.
In that book that
yes,
I picked up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They did not believe that it was necessary to be baptized. They did not believe in confession. They didn't really have priests as such. And they also believed that sexual intercourse was not a very, very good thing. They felt that it was quite negative.
Now, what period of history, people might wonder what period of history we're talking about here, if they've never heard of the Cathars and wondering, well, why haven't I heard of this group?
Well, the Cathars were around for a long, long time, way back in the 12th century. And the First Crusade was against the Cathars. And they felt that they had really wiped them out, but they really hadn't wiped them out. And they did go into the south of France in hiding, and they were quite successful at continuing their religion, only they didn't spread it. people had to find them, and apparently DaVinci
Well, if you don't
did.
Believe in reproduction, it's kind of hard to sustain well, your culture.
I'm sure they believed in reproduction, mm-hmm. but not for fun. Mm-hmm.
My guest is Claire Althauser, and she teaches a class called History Through Mystery. She's a peer leader with OLLI, Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, on the Chico State campus. And this novel that you just, and they are novels that
they are
might
all novels.
Remind people that these are all novels.
And they're mysteries.
And they are mysteries, but they are historical novels, so you can learn history as you go.
Yes. And the thing I do is I do a great deal of research, and then I find links that I can send to the class, and if they want to read them, fine. If they don't, fine. Mm-hmm. And I try to be sure that in our discussion that the things that are historical are brought out and that they got the point, as it were.
Well, for example, if people are curious about the Cathars, they can then go off on and research that on their own and learn more about this.
Well, actually, I've sent them loads and loads and loads and loads of links, so they don't even have to do it. One of the books I really like to talk about is The Secrets of Mary Bowser, and it's by Lois Levine. And this is a personal opinion. I think it's the best book on the list. When I wrote to Lois and I told her I was going to do this book, she wrote back. We've had a back and forth for a number of years now, and she said, "What's the mystery about the Civil War? North wins, South loses, that's it." I said, "Oh, no. There's a mystery about the Underground Railroad. There's a mystery about the woman who was the spy." And the story is about a woman who really existed, a black gal who was a slave. And when she was 5 years old, it was very obvious she was extremely bright, and she had a photographic memory. When the owner's daughter came of age and got her inheritance, she bought all her mother's slaves, freed them, and she sent Mary to school in Philadelphia.
And all this is fact, we might
reiterate. This is all fact.
Reiterate that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
because people probably have not heard of this person.
No, and you will hear very little of her because very little has been written about her. But all of the characters that surround her existed and did what Lois has them doing. And the Underground Railway does come into play. And when Mary was in Philadelphia as a free woman, her mother had been freed but pretended not to be in order to be able to stay with the father who couldn't get freed because he was owned by somebody else.
Let's remind people, the author's name is Lois Levine.
Levine, L-E-V-E-E-N.
So yes. Spelled a little unusual. Lois
yes.
Levine.
Yes.
The name of her book is The Secrets of Mary Bowser, and this is taking place during the Civil War.
Civil War.
And
what happened was after Mary's mother died and she got a letter from her father, Mary decided to go back down south. There were things that implemented this decision of hers, and she agreed to work as a slave in Jefferson Davis's home and be a spy for the North. So there's the mystery also. Does she get away with it? And I'm not going to tell you the answer.
No, don't tell us the answer.
No,
but
no spoilers.
So did this person, Mary Bowser, what did she actually do this?
Yes. It's fact.
Yeah.
That's fact. Yes. And Bette Lou, who was the owner, did it also. And all of the people that are in the book really did it. It's an exciting, and the great thing about the book is the first sentence grabs you, and you can't put it down.
Well, I find Civil War history just so fascinating in itself, and especially since when we're in classes in high school, college, we learn what the generals did, we know what Grant did, we know what Lee did, but we don't often get an idea of what about the other people? What did they do?
And the other thing that's very good about this book is you not only see what the people in Richmond and Philadelphia in the upper class did, you also see what the middle class did, and you see what the slaves and the freed slaves were going through. Because we think that the slaves that lived in the North had it all made. They did not. They were really just as persecuted mm-hmm. in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to erase stereotypical images that we have of these two cultures that were warring. and we hear about brother against brother. And so it's helpful to have a novel to be able to read that is based on fact to help us re-examine some of these stereotypes that we have come up with that are so ingrained that we don't even realize that we're...
That's true. And the story is told from Mary's point of view. It's told in the first person. And when you're reading the book, you feel as if you're there. It isn't as, oh, if this happened, it's, mm-hmm. What am I going to do next?
Yeah, yeah.
Very exciting book.
And the fact that here's a woman who was a spy.
Yes, and a black woman.
And a black woman.
Yes.
Voice that we practically never hear.
And the interesting thing is that she was very black, as far as we could tell. She was not the light skin, because a lot of the light-skinned ones, especially in the North, were able to pass for white. In fact, mm-hmm. she was dating a man that was able to do that. But she was so black that people didn't even notice she was there. And mm-hmm. she was able to switch, because she was quite cultured, obviously, mm-hmm. and she was able to switch right into the black speech, the slave mm-hmm. attitude. She had it all
down. So she could pass for black.
She could pass for black, exactly.
And her role as a spy, which was helpful then.
Yes, and the whole spy network is exposed in the book too. We don't even think about that mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how it happened, and the Underground Railroad. That aspect is very exciting.
Yeah, and we know it existed, but we don't know what it was like from, say, this woman's point of view.
That's right.
How fascinating.
That's right. Yes, and she was part of the railroad also.
Now, this is a book that you have already read in your classes.
No, we're going to
start. You're going to this
start
coming...
Monday.
Uh-huh.
This is January's book.
Yeah, yeah. So what books are you reading then in your book club?
In AAUW?
Oh, that's okay, because I actually asked you to come in to talk about the ones in your class
yes.
that you're doing.
We are doing the book in common in our book group, and we did, called Paganini's Ghost. It's contemporary murder, deals with a violin maker and a boy who is a genius, and he has just won the Paganini competition, and he's allowed to play Paganini's violin. And this is real. Mm-hmm. This boy isn't real, but this happens every other year in Milan. They do have this competition, and Paganini's Guarneri is pulled out, and the winner of the competition gets to play it.
Well, it's been such a pleasure talking to you about your class, your course that you teach through OLLI. You're a peer leader. My guest is Claire Altheuser, and she teaches a class that's very popular called History Through Mystery for Osher Lifelong Learning. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you so very much, Nancy. I appreciate it.
You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.